Hello, everybody. Welcome back to For the Girls. We are here with a Saudi Grand Prix recap and happy belated International Women's Day. Just huge cheers to all the amazing women in motorsport and in general. We're so excited to be recapping the first F1 Academy race this season in honor of International Women's Day and every day. But yeah, lots to discuss. And IndyCar also started their season this weekend, so tons going on. But yeah, lots to dive into, some great, some bad, some ugly, but we will dive into it all as always. With that, I'm Tiggy.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Chessa. Okay, wow, the good, bad, and the ugly. Let's do it. Overall thoughts and takeaways from the weekend. I don't know if it's too soon to be saying this, but I think Ferrari's going to get P2 in Constructors, and it's going to be an epic battle between McLaren, Aston Martin, and Mercedes based on what we've seen this weekend. And I actually do think Max will win every single race this weekend. Like, I don't think we're going to have every single race this season, I don't think we're going to have a different winner, save for something like appendicitis happening to Max. Like, I truly don't think we're in for that much of a surprise.
Honestly, if Max gets appendicitis, he's not going to be out of the car for the weekend.
They probably like already took it out just preemptively in the off season.
What are the odds? It's so crazy that two F1 drivers both had this happen to them in consecutive seasons. It seems strange. And causing the same ripple effect of having a reserve driver in the car perform amazingly, all these funny timelines of, oh, the dominoes falling caused by Albon's appendicitis. I wonder if we'll have something similar for silly season.
I've been loving all those memes of the dominoes with signs as appendix instead of Alex's this time. We'll see what happens.
For me, I think that was really the main excitement this weekend, was seeing Ollie put in such an incredible performance. It just blew me away, 18 years old, getting that amount of pressure, absolutely no warning, having to hop in the car last minute. He's done a couple practices before, but really minimal experience in an F1 car, and a strong points finish and solid points, not even P10, solidly in the points. So that was incredible. It was so heartwarming seeing him and his dad and his family. I love that he won driver of the day by such a huge margin. It was very well deserved. So that was my favorite part of the weekend. I think a great reminder that there is so much up and coming talent in the sport to be excited for.
And so few seats.
Oh, so sad. Well said.
Yeah, I fully agree with all those takeaways. I think for me, I kind of just want to take a second to address maybe some of the clouds hanging over the weekend. It feels wrong to me to just kind of like jump into all the racing without acknowledging, I think, that it was a difficult weekend for a lot of women, especially on International Women's Day, and the news coming out that the female employee was suspended at Red Bull. A little bit ironic that it fell on International Women's
Literally
Day
and
the first F1 Academy race of the season. It's just very frustrating when the full focus should be on celebrating and uplifting women. And it just felt like the lack of transparency and seeing that news come out just, I don't know. I think it made me very confused and angry, and I think a lot of people felt the same. So I just wanted
I think that's so good to call out. And we appreciate all the messages that we got from everyone, like DMing us on Instagram and just hearing your thoughts. And that's definitely the overall sentiment. So I guess the more that we can just be in this together and build a community and celebrate at least the good things, the better. Yeah.
Definitely. But anyway, we'll get into all of our good stuff, but super excited for me. It was super exciting just to see the F1 Academy ladies race for the first time this year. And there was so much excitement, which we'll dive into, but that was a huge highlight for me. And yeah, also loved seeing Ollie, which we'll talk about.
Yeah, well, let's do our MVPs. I'm assuming we're all going to pick him.
Well, hopefully we can have a little diversity, but yes, Ollie Bearman for me. Ollie Bearman. I thought it was Bierman, but
Oliver Bearman. I keep reading it as Bierman.
So many fun stats this weekend. Third youngest driver to start a GP. There were so many, like, you know, Alonso finished second in the Spanish Grand Prix the day he was born. I think he was the first F1 driver to be born after all seven of Michael Schumacher's titles. There was like some random stat. First time since 1968 that there were four Brits in the points. So like people were loving the stats this weekend about Ollie. But yeah, it was just so uplifting to see P7 point scoring in his debut, driver of the day, keeping Norris and Hamilton no less behind him for
insane
almost the last like 10 or so laps. So yeah, just huge. And also loved the dad reaction in the garage the entire weekend. So huge MVP.
Yeah, I think His dad is one of my runner-ups because he looked so nervous yet so proud at the same time. It was beautiful.
It was so wholesome. I love seeing parents in the garages and like their raw reactions to things.
I have a couple. I'm a little split. I feel like Piastri with a strong P4. I was super excited about that. Hülkenberg in the points in P10. Was impressed with just how much they've struggled to convert Saturday into Sunday, as we've talked about a lot. It was great to see points from them. I think my MVP, though, has to be Checo for hanging in there and doing what it is he needs to do in order to keep his seat and not kind of increase the pressure on him. He does not need to win. He does not need to show up max. He just needs a solid, clean weekend with a good, reliable P2 finish, and that's exactly what he delivered. He did have the penalty for an unsafe release with a double stack, but besides that, some great racing from him. Overall, a good performance. Granted, he is so strong on street circuits. He won here last year. This track is more of a strength for him, but I just really hope he can keep that up. I mean, maybe not for the sport more generally if we have a Red Bull 1-2 every weekend, but happy for him to be delivering so far this season.
It's really nice to see that, especially with all the rhetoric at the beginning of the season about Danny and about Checo losing his seat and Danny not having a good start to the season and Checo really outperforming. So I think it just goes to show, like, don't count drivers out until they're done, you know? And I think Checo's proving 100%. That he's doing, he's in it for at least the season, but we'll see if he goes farther.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Checo too. And it's actually funny. I think the Danny Checo thing has been a big underlying topic following this weekend because Danny had such a, like, there was just no race. Danny didn't even have a race this weekend. And people having the whole conversation about Danny potentially replacing Checo, I really do think may have been jumping the gun a little bit. Okay, LVP. Mine was the Alpines. They, like, just were out before they were even in. And I just think it's going to be a really, really rough start for the rest of the season for them.
I think Ocon actually had a fine race. He moved up 4 positions from where he started. But yeah, it was really a bummer about Gasly's gearbox.
Right at the beginning, yeah.
I'm going to give it to Danny. I think just in a similar vein to what we were just talking about, I feel like he really has not performed in the way that I think a lot of people expected him to. And there was a lot of talk about how great the V-carb car was going to be. And Yuki's outperformed Danny, I think, every race so far and every session. So it's not great for Danny, and I'm surprised, but I also think Danny's got to show up if he wants to be moving up in the world.
I definitely agree on the Alpine's tough showing, but I think similarly, I think my LVP would probably be the stakes P17 and P18, which is last, because we had 2 DNFs. Just, I think with the rebrand, I was hopeful that maybe they had put something together for this season, but it's not looking great so far. And then also K-Mag, which is somehow managing to get a million penalties. I feel like that always happens.
But he was kind of heroic in the race in holding everyone off so Nico Hülkenberg could score that 1 point, I think.
That precious point for the Haases.
I'm surprised nobody said Stroll, because Stroll was a pretty good LVP contender this race with going into the wall and the frustrated radio message. Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like Stroll's is just kind of a table stakes LVP at this point. I thought we had to switch it up. Okay, let's do our hot takes. Tiggy, you go first.
Ugh, Mercedes podium. Enough said. Didn't happen. Not looking good. End of story.
I literally just said there's going to be issues at Ferrari, and I actually meant reliability issues. I did not mean medical and appendicitis issues, so I feel kind of bad about it. But Ollie Bearman kind of proved me wrong there. Bearman.
I said a shakeup. LOL. I feel like I keep saying this recently. I said a shakeup with a non-max win. I think it's either Checo on podium or Checo performing well. So Checo was up there, but definitely nothing. Absolutely nothing about the podium could be categorized as a shakeup in any capacity.
Yeah, that hot take is going to continue to be really hot, I think, for the foreseeable future.
I'm curious about your all's thoughts, actually, before we move on. Lewis made a comment that was really interesting, kind of not downplaying people's frustrations with the Red Bull dominance, but just kind of saying, oh, we had the Schumacher era. Then we had my era of dominance, and now we have Red Bull kind of just normalizing it in terms of the periods of domination in sport, which I thought was super interesting coming from him.
Yeah, I'm actually not that surprised Lewis would say that, because if he criticizes Red Bull's period of dominance, then like everybody's going to go after his 7-8 yeah. years, you know? So I think it is very characteristic of F1, but it is nice to see someone trying to normalize it, at least someone in Lewis's position.
Yeah. Lewis was probably normalizing it and trying to just level set with, this is kind of how Formula One is. And if you've been watching in the past 2 or 3 years, you haven't gotten it, but this is what you should be used to. So interesting that he did that.
For better or for worse, I guess.
It just is what it is. Okay, let's jump into the race weekend itself. So FP1, Alonso was the big winner. He came in P2 just behind Max. And then Checo, George, and Charles followed to round it out there. We had the exact same top five in FP2, actually. But then we had Alonso in P1, followed by George. And then we had Max, which was really exciting, but obviously not ever going to be indicative of what's going to be happening in the race weekend itself.
For FP3, it was way closer to what we saw in quali. We had Max P1, then Charles P2, and Checo P3. Sainz had to drop out of the weekend starting at FP3 due to last-minute appendicitis surgery. He was replaced, as we've talked about, by Ferrari Jr. Oliver Berman. Berman, who is only 18 years old. And it's crazy, too, thinking about what Sainz was going through at the start of the weekend in FP1 and FP2, because he was saying the whole time, oh, I'm really, really not feeling well. He said it was his toughest day in an F1 car. And then in hindsight, he was driving with a bursting appendix.
It just goes to show what these drivers put themselves through or are willing to take.
Totally.
It's insane. For quali, so Q1, the biggest excitement was Ollie making it to Q2. I was just holding my breath and watching his dad when he was doing that second flying lap was just, oh my God, it was crazy. Unfortunately, a horrible Q1 for the Alpines, who were both out. And then the real hero story here, besides Ollie, was the Stake mechanics, who were able to fix Joe's car just in time. They got him into Q1, but it was unfortunately not enough time for a full timed lap. But after his crash in FP3, it was heroic that they were able to turn the car around in literally 2 hours. So in the end, in Q1, we had knocked out Bottas, Ocon, Gasly, Logan, and Joe.
For Q2, the Haases were looking strong, which made me very happy. The drivers were giving each other a tow, but just as he was going down the main straight, Hülkenberg had a loss of power. He brought out a red flag. So in the end, in Q2, we had Ollie Behrmann out. We had Albon. I'm going to keep saying that. It's so funny. We had Albon, Magnussen, Danny, and Hülkenberg.
But Oliver was so close. I think it was like 0.036 seconds or something like that. He came in P11, but so close to making it to Q3.
For Q3, it was an awesome quality for McLaren. Piastri's P5 was the team's highest ever start in Jeddah since the inaugural race in 2021. In the end, Max and Charles came out on the front row with a P1 and a P2. This is the fifth race in a row that they're lining up side by side. So again, the least shake-up type start ever. So we had Max, Charles, Checo, Alonso, Piastri, Lando, George, Hamilton, and a surprising round out of the top 10 with Yuki and Stroll in P9 and P10. So that was a bit exciting.
For the race, a couple of overall highlights before we get into teams. It was unfortunately a bit of a predictable race. Max and Red Bull were just living in their own world, but at least we had some interesting strategy after Stroll brought out an early safety car from going into the wall. There was most people pitted for hards and tried to at least get close to the end of the race on those, if not finish on those. And then we had a couple unlucky people, which ended up being the unfortunate strategy, staying on the original tires. But we did see a strong battle for P3 through P6. We had some great performances from Charles, Piastri, Alonso, the only top of the pack, quote unquote, team that lacked a bit this weekend was the Mercedes. So we'll definitely get into that a little bit more. But yeah, for our radio of the week, we have to go with Ollie Behrmann, who he said at the end, it was so much fun out there, just a very wholesome radio, and so excited for his debut. Very sweet.
I don't think my – if I had – I mean, I'll never have an F1 debut, but if I did have an F1 debut, I don't think it would be fun. Like, I'm thinking back to when I first did karting, and I literally got out of the cart and almost, like, vomited. I was like
– yeah.
Adrenaline was way too much.
The headrests on his car were all dented from his helmet. Like, he couldn't keep his neck straight up, which, of course, like, he only had literally an hour of practice to prep for this, but insane.
Yeah,
I cannot. His radio was so calm and collected too. Just his tone of voice, so even. Not like a, oh my gosh, I just finished my first F1 race. Just even made a comment like, oh, the tires were good on the first stint. I wish that could have lasted a bit longer.
The announcers were like, we've got an F1 driver already. Like, he's been PR trained. He sounds like an F1 driver. Yeah. At least a Piastri-esque F1 driver.
Yeah, very calm, cool, and collected. Okay, let's talk about teams. Okay, Red Bull. I mean, we could probably just skip over this, except for the fact that I have a funny quote that I want to share from Max. So obviously a very leisurely weekend for him. He took his 57th career win, his 100th podium out of 188 races. Does anyone want to guess what he said when someone said, okay, that's 100 podiums out of 188? I think we can probably all guess. He goes, oh, well, that's 88 missed podiums, which is just like unbelievable for him. But I think the craziest thing for me, and I guess we have to come to terms with it, or my question to you guys is how we're going to come to terms with it, that Max will just win every single race this season. Like, it's decided now. I was kind of hoping it wasn't going to be, but I really think it's going to happen. So we kind of have to think of it as like two different F1 races in my mind. Every week.
If you look at the broadcast, I was watching the race on Saturday, and I don't think they showed Max's car a single time except for his radio at the end when he won the race. Like,
exactly.
Even the broadcasters don't even show him because there's nothing interesting to show. So we've already had at least a year of this dominance, so I feel like we're kind of used to it. I'm resigned to the fact.
Ugh, so I hate being resigned. There's much
to come to terms with, but yeah, it is. At least the broadcasters are highlighting things that are a little bit more interesting.
Yeah.
My main question now, which we've talked about a lot, but is Max also resigned to this? To me, it makes these kind of could Max go to Mercedes conspiracy theories or rumors, kind of could he do a shock move to another team? It makes it more likely in my mind because I think to him from all of his talk about how he doesn't really need to do this forever, I don't know if he feels the need to try to beat Lewis's record of 7 world titles. I think it makes it more likely that he could do one of these shock moves to either Mercedes or another team because it doesn't seem like from his public statements that he's intent on trying to beat Schumacher and Lewis's record of 7 titles. It seems like he has said over and over again, I don't feel the need to do this forever. I've achieved a lot in the sport already. It's 24, 25 races a season. If it could ever go up to 25, it's just so incredibly taxing. And I think if he feels like he's already checked off all the boxes in terms of achievement, a number of titles, a number of wins, and he wants to actually race, it seems like he might have to go to another team pending potentially the rank change.
But I think the only thing Max hates more than like being bored is not
is
winning. Yeah.
Okay, because here's what I was – imagine how great it would be if Max was like, okay – let's go. I'm going to go to the Williams and just see if my skills are really skills and not the car. But you're
that
right.
That would be a chronic experiment, but I don't see that ever happening.
He's like, let me go make less than $1 million a year at Williams and see what happens.
I feel like the only way he would like fully bail and switch teams is if he really had conviction that another team was going to set him up to like do super well in 2026 or
yeah,
he was bringing
huge.
Adrian Newey or he was bringing Helmut Marko. Like, I don't know. I think it makes it maybe slightly more likely, especially with all this craziness happening at Red Bull, but I don't think Max likes to lose. So it's a tough
Adrian Newey and Max announced shock move to Sauber.
They are starting the 11th F1 team.
Andretti.
We go to Andretti.
That would be iconic. Then they would get in. That would be such great leverage for Andretti. Oh my gosh.
That's all they would need. Like they would no longer be an American team. It would just be like a V-carb 2.0.
Yeah, V-carb. I had never thought there was ever any possibility whatsoever of Max leaving Red Bull. To me, he just seems like such a Lewis at Mercedes type figure of just such a central role in the team. But all of the team turmoil right now, the apparent civil war happening inside the team, it coming out that apparently Jost and Max have some type of relationship with Toto. I don't know. Never say never.
But we also have Carlos's dad and cousin slash manager meeting with Toto. So Toto said he's going to take his time, but he also said that any team would be doing handstands to sign Max Verstappen. So,
oh my God. I think for silly season, we're going to have to do round the clock shifts. Like we're going to each stay awake
24 hours with the time change.
The news cycle, baby, never stops.
We're going to have to like do shifts. Like I'll take the overnight. Two times a week, you do two times a week, you do two times a week.
Also, what do you all think of the fact that Toto and Max and Jost do have this relationship? Because I would have, if I had guessed, I would have guessed that after 2021, it was kind of too acrimonious or just that there was too much animosity for them to be friends. But it seems like they hang out and grab dinner.
I think Toto is mature enough not to take out Abu Dhabi 2021 on Max. Like Max did, Max put himself in the position he needed to be in to like land on the right side of that coin.
Well said. And
Toto's frustration lies with Michael Masi sipping pina coladas in Australia.
More generally in the season, they would say things like Max is way too aggressive. Max pushes the limits of what's acceptable. No one can,
which was true. But I think which was true, but he's matured as a driver.
Well, that's a hot take that his driving is any different than you think he's a different driver now than he was in 2021.
Well, he hasn't had to be tested in the same way. But yeah, I do think that he's matured as a driver. We haven't seen him not keep it clean in a long time.
Yeah. And I will also add that like on the relationship side of things, like this is the smallest, tightest knit world and they've all known each other for decades and decades. Like you have to come to a point where you're a true businessman. You can separate like business from friendships and relationships and always see like 10 steps ahead because you never know, right? Like you'd be fighting with Max now, but you know he's such a gem and you'd want him for your team however many years down the line. So
that should just be the clip from this episode. Max is such a gem.
Sarah's feeling very vindicated right now. For Ferrari, okay, so we talked about the biggest storyline, Ollie Bearman stepping in for Sainz. We already kind of mentioned all the stats, but he did score 6 points with a P7 finish. So technically, he's now P10 in the Drivers' Championship, which is amazing. No, absolutely crushed it. Like we said, holding off Lando and Lewis, no small feat, but... yeah, it was such a bummer for Sainz, although we did love Sainz's post with his dad of, like in the hospital when Sainz's dad also had his appendix taken out however many years ago.
It's an F1 driver thing because if you grabbed like a population of people in the regular world, like I don't think as many people seem to be having their appendices out. But it was really funny. And I want to talk about again, like, so Oliver's headrest had massive dents in it on the side. Because I guess he hasn't had as much training to like really hold his neck up. And it's like a very clear physical example that you can see of the extreme G-forces at work on these drivers' necks when they're going around the track. Like he literally dented a carbon fiber headrest.
So crazy. There were certain points where you could see Oliver and Charles like going around the same turn, kind of they weren't side by side, but like the camera view side by side. And like their necks were in completely different positions. Like Charles was like straight up and Ollie was like all the way off.
He must be so sore today.
So sore. So sore. But speaking with Charles, ended up on podium in P3, snagged fastest lap from Max, which was great. And he just drove quite consistently, very complimentary of the team, saying they're definitely making up more ground, steadily improving. The gap definitely was slightly closer to Red Bull, even if that's not saying a ton. But it's good to see Charles and Carlos last race feeling good about the car, about the team. So I think that bodes well, hopefully, for their season.
For Mercedes, they did seem to have comparable pace to the McLaren and the Aston Martin, but they couldn't convert this to finishing at the front. They finished George P6, Lewis P9. It was a bummer for Hamilton because his strategy just really didn't work out this weekend. The team made a bet to keep him out on mediums during the safety car when the race leaders pitted for hards. This was a gamble that really would have only paid off with another late safety car. McLaren had a similar strategy with Lando, but when he pitted for softs, Hamilton ran out of time to pass him. So just didn't really convert there, but my personal favorite Hamilton moment, or I guess there are a couple from the weekend, but him waiting for Ollie to get out of his car to congratulate him was incredible. And Tiggy has said this so many times, and it's true. Just the way that Lewis is such an ambassador for the sport and shows up in ways that other drivers just don't. Lewis going to the F1 Academy podium ceremony to congratulate Dorian in person. Just Lewis does things like that consistently that other drivers just don't do. Imagine being Ollie and you're 18, you get out of your car and the greatest driver of all time is standing there waiting for you. And yeah, he knows who you are. It must have been crazy.
And I feel like of all people, Lewis is probably one of the busiest drivers on a race weekend, but consistently makes time for.
But the best
like
thing
this.
About him is that he doesn't make you feel that way. I mean, not that we know him personally, but like in all of these interactions, none of it feels forced. None of it feels like, so oh, I'm doing this to, you know, prop up my image or whatever. Like we've seen
the PR
from,
people told me to go walk over there. Yeah.
We've seen that so many times from other people in the past, and it's no shade to them, but I do just feel like it feels so authentic with Lewis. And yeah, he was in and around that F1 Academy paddock the entire weekend. Just shout out to Lewis. I'm glad I wasn't the one to say that first. So thank you, Sarah.
Wow. Me saying Max is a gem. Sarah talking about Lewis. What's happening? Okay, let's talk about McLaren. So actually not a bad weekend for them. They had a strong double points finish, but I almost feel like they could have scooped up a few more points. They did struggle a little, like Mercedes. They struggled a little bit on the straight line speed. Oscar, who did finish P4, which is great. He spent 20 laps trying to get past Hamilton on the straights, struggling to match their speed down the straights. And he had a little quote that said it was a frustrating 20 laps behind Lewis. But yeah, I think at the end, that was the most we could have done.
Yeah, he said it in the driver's parade. He was like, yeah, the best we can get out of this weekend is a P4. And he did it. But one of my favorite things was his Instagram caption after the weekend, which was now a Mercedes rear wing expert and 12 points better off. Happy days. It's
like, that's he's so good. I wonder if he comes up with that himself. He probably does. He's like, such a smart, quippy man. To round out McLaren, Lando finished in P8 after what was kind of a suboptimal strategy, or kind of like the strategy that lost this weekend.
But the crazy thing was the Sarah mentioned at the beginning, the false start penalty that he didn't end up getting. So George called him out on this, and it really looked like from the cameras that he did do a false start. Like he rolled and then he stopped and then he rolled again when the lights finally went out. But apparently there's this like transponder on the car that actually registers if it's a false start or not. And if the transponder says it's not, even though it looks like it is, then you're good. And so apparently that's what happened with Lando. Wow. Like it looked very much like a false start, but
maybe the wheel like didn't rotate enough to activate the transponder or something. That's very interesting.
I'm really shocked. Honestly, there aren't more false starts.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I guess you need someone like
fast reaction times.
George Russell being, you know, looking after your case and ready to report you.
Wild. Okay, friends, it's festival and concert season, and you know it's all about the boots this year. That's why you need to make Tecovas your number one place for festival style this spring. And don't forget to shop their seasonal and limited edition offerings, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. We love Tecovas. They have a first wear comfort, which basically means there's no break-in period. It's the best thing ever. So stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's really no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it to a store, though, just visit tecovas.com, tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and they ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
For Aston Martin, this was an important race for the team after a not-so-great performance at last weekend's season opener. Alonso was really the star of the show here. He put in a strong lap time in quali to start on the second row, and he did lose position to Oscar. He had a near brush with the barriers at the end of the race, but overall his race performance was really strong. Solid P5 finish to show that, at least so far, the Aston Martin pace is able to compete with the best of the rest. Stroll, on the other hand, bit of a tough one. Big DNF after hitting the barriers. Thankfully, he walked away with no injuries, but always really scary at Jeddah when there's high speed like that. It's such a dangerous circuit. I still think it errs on the too narrow and too dangerous side. He had a mistake, clipped the barrier at turn 22, broke his suspension and sent him flying into the barriers. He had a bit of a sassy response on the radio after his engineer asked if he can make it back to the pits of, no, I'm in the beeping wall. It's funny sometimes when the engineers sometimes with so much chaos going on and with the screens not necessarily being in real time yet, they haven't seen sometimes that the driver's right. on the wall and say something that just doesn't make sense in the moment.
I'm never down for like a sassy response or being mean to your engineers and your team, but I feel like I might have said the same thing. It's probably so frustrating for him to like make a mistake, hit the barriers. You're obviously like you're pounding so winded from the crash and you're like, no, obviously like I'm literally in the wall right now. I can't make it back.
Definitely. For V-Carb, not the best weekend for them. Yuki's pace fell off throughout the race. And again, we talked about Danny already, just not a great performance, and then had that late lap, last lap spin, which was super strange. So Yuki finished P14, Danny P16. And we talked about this a little bit already, but what do we think about Danny's performance? Does it feel like him and he's kind of lost it, or is it the car? Like, it just, it's not feeling good for all the hype surrounding him heading into this season.
I want to say it's the car because he did so well testing in the Red Bull, and maybe he's like more used to a car that's like the Red Bull. But I think the whole point of the season was to make the V-Carb more like the Red Bull. So now I'm inclined to say it's Danny.
Yeah. And like when
I feel like,
yes, but I think it's hard to like just put it on the car when Yuki's outperforming him, you know?
Exactly. I think it's Danny.
I think it might be a little too soon to tell, but this isn't the type of blazing performance in the start of the season that would make him a serious contender for Checo's seat either midseason or for next year either. So I think he has to really pick it up if he wants to be competing for that seat. He needs to be not just beating Yuki, he needs to be really convincingly beating Yuki on a consistent basis, and that is simply not happening. I think just not even beating Yuki, outperforming the car, it's just that seat is the hottest ticket on the grid.
Liam Lawson.
Carlos. Yeah, now Carlos is available. There's so much young talent. I think at this rate, he wouldn't be in serious conversation for that.
Yeah, I kind of was thinking a lot this weekend watching Ollie, and obviously we had Liam Lawson last year. It just feels like such a shame that we have such great talents who feel really hungry and ready to be in a car, and we just have no seats. But we have, I think, a lot of drivers who, you know, theoretically could, or maybe even should, maybe that's going too far, but at some point soon be thinking about hanging up the helmet.
I think you're not
remember
wrong.
When was it? It was before the Aston Martin turnaround, when I forget who it was. Maybe it was Tiggy had a big thing of like Alonso needs to retire. And
I did. I literally said Alonso needs to retire. And I still stand by that. Like I like Alonso. I'm here for his comeback and that's great. And it's providing fun entertainment. But if I had to pick like Alonso in a seat for 3 more years versus getting a rookie in, I would say Alonso, hang it up.
Tiggy's like, the youth are the future. The youth are the future.
Give us something. So not a horrible segue to Stake/Sauber with Bottas coming P17, Joe P18. Like we said, the mechanics were absolutely heroic for getting Joe's car out in time for quali. And he was actually up in P10 and P11 for part of the race, but he had a pit stop issue. And then Bottas just didn't have the pace on the hards to really compete at all. So it was a lonely, sad end of the pack finish for them.
For Alpine, it was a tragic Gasly DNF. I feel like we have not been hearing anything from the Alpines with regards to how they're actually racing and just all this organizational reshuffle. So then it was very tragic when on the formation lap, Gasly gets a DNF with his gearbox failure. They gave it a chance to try and start the race, but he was out immediately. Tiggy did have a good comeback to me when I said the Alpines were my LVPs with Ocon, because he did make up multiple places, starting P17 and then ending up finishing in P13. So obviously not the points finish they want, but at least he was fighting and trying to get back into better form.
For Haas, they had some decent straight line speed. And like we said, with some, depending on your characterization, heroic or bending the rules, defending from K-Mag. We had Hulk with one P10 point. So was really excited for Hulkenberg there to actually see kind of points come Haas's way. K-Mag defended really aggressively to help Hulkenberg stay ahead, but the Racing Bulls are complaining to the FIA over alleged unsportsmanlike conduct from K-Mag, because K-Mag was slowing down the pace so much to hold Yuki back. And even though K-Mag did get a penalty among many other penalties, our Racing Bulls, VCARB said that that wasn't enough. They were really upset about this. I think it's interesting because I think it's so common that teammates in high-stakes scenarios really aggressively defend to help their teammate in front. I'm thinking of Checo and Max towards the tail end of the one championship. So I think it feels like a stretch to call that unsportsmanlike.
Unless it was unsafe, I agree with what you're saying.
And he's also got like 20 seconds of penalties, so let's just let him live.
Yeah. Let the man live.
To round out the teams for Williams, we had a P11 for Albon and a P14 for Logan. Albon was so close to the points, even with car damage from that early contact with K-Mag. So unfortunately, sensing a little bit of a theme here, K-Mag got 10 seconds for that. But yes, interesting, since the inaugural Saudi GP in 2021, this is the first time that both Williams have finished the race. So I guess we could be excited about that. But yeah, James Vowles did get on the Instagram and said it was not the weekend they were hoping for. So hopefully they'll learn and keep coming back stronger.
Okay, so it feels – I love that we're saying this now because we didn't say this last weekend because we have enough points now to do full driver standing. So Max is already at 51 points. Then we have Checo and P2, Charles, George, Oscar, Carlos, Alonso, Lando, Lewis, and Oli Berman. Okay, and for the teams, we have Red Bull in first, obviously, Ferrari in second, and then we have the McLaren, the Mercedes, and the Aston Martin. I think it's going to be a fun race for P3 between all of those last three teams.
I love how you're just already giving it to Ferrari. Let's remember where Ferrari started last season.
Oh, I'm fully ready to get proven wrong. It's fine.
All right, on to happy, happy news. So F1 Academy recap. It was a huge weekend for them. It was their season kickoff. Also, as we mentioned, coincided very well with International Women's Day. It was just so great to see them out on track in their new liveries, which looks incredible. They have really leveled up. The drivers just look really happy to be out there. The cars look amazing. So just a little bit of a reminder, each weekend features two qualifying sessions and two races. In both the qualies, we had the same results with the Prema cars and Roden up top. We had Dorian Pin in P1, Abby Pulling P2, and Maya Wuch in P3. So that was super exciting. So Dorian got a pole for both of the races.
Killing it.
For the first race, Dorian in the Mercedes started from pole. She led the race from there to secure her first F1 Academy win. Abby Pulling, who's driving with Alpine, podiumed in second with Maya Wong in P3. And fun fact, Dorian's nickname is the Pocket Rocket. I like that.
I love that. So cute.
It's adorable.
After the race was over, Lola Lovenfoss got a 10-second time penalty for causing a collision with Nerea Marti on the final lap of the race. She was demoted to P8, and Bianca Bustamante and a few other drivers were able to move up a place.
Like that penalty in race one was definitely foreshadowing for a lot of the penalty flurries that was happening in race two. So race two was very similar. So Dorian got another win, Abby came P2, and then Ferrari's Maya Wu completed the podium. But then we had a bunch of different penalties. So I think we just need to break them down because at least I was a little bit confused and thrown off. So the first and I think biggest penalty or most covered one was a drive-through penalty that was issued to Dorian for crossing the checkered flag and then not slowing down. So apparently what had happened is she had failed to notice the checkered flag at the end of the race, continued at full pace on the cool down lap until they had brought out a bunch of different red flags to get her attention. And apparently what had happened was her radio malfunctioned. She couldn't hear her team. And also the flags were partially obscured. So there was a chance that she might not have seen the checkered flag at the end. So that was a big penalty for her. It was a 20-second penalty that obviously she couldn't serve during the race because it happened after the race, which demoted her down. So, and then we ended up with Abby Pulling in P1, Maya Wu in P2, and then Nerea Marti in P4. What do you guys think? Do you think this was too harsh? The internet is completely split on it right now. I think it was definitely a safety issue with her going full speed after the checkered flag. But if she wasn't really able to see the flag and her radio was broken, maybe 20 seconds was a bit too harsh.
I think it feels harsh. Yeah, I think it feels really harsh, especially first weekend of the season. I agree it's a safety issue, but then have maybe better measures to slow a driver down or get their attention. I guess there's not much you can do if the radio's broken, but Yeah, it feels like such a bummer after her celebrating on the podium, having such a stellar weekend, getting two P1s.
Yeah, right, the podium the celebration.
And then they let her do that. Hours later, demoting her. It's awkward for everybody involved. So I think it feels like growing pains.
I wonder if maybe 10 seconds would have been a bit more fair, because it kind of reminds me a kind of unsafe release or penalties like that, where it's oftentimes not the driver's fault, like it was a team error or just a lack of visibility. I think you never get a 20-second time penalty for that.
Exactly. Oh, Sarah, maybe you should be a steward. Great reasoning. To round out the flurry of penalties that we mentioned, Amna Al-Kubaisi got a 5-second time penalty for leaving the track and gaining an advantage. And then lastly, Lola Lavenfoss, she got a 5-place grid penalty, which will be served at the next race, for causing a collision with Leah Block during an unsafe re-entry. I think the general consensus, I think, for this weekend, like I mentioned, is, you know, these are kind of just growing pains. Little mistakes like these from the drivers will be ironed out throughout the rest of the season. I think the stewards will also get more comfortable with the rule book here and calling any of the penalties. And I think this is probably just a case of first race jitters, so to speak. But I think overall the weekend was incredibly successful. Dorian Pin is being touted as the likely champion of the series already. So that's really exciting for her.
So I will say, I think it's going to be super fun to watch her and Abby Pulling battle it out. It was really fun to see them in the cool down room after the first race, kind of like talking about it. I think Abby said something like, I almost had you. I don't know. Like, there's a lot of competitiveness and it's exciting. So I love that.
So one thing we want to start to do after F1 Academy race weekends is to just highlight like one or two really amazing moments from the races or just on off track action. So I think for mine, we already mentioned this. I think one of you guys already mentioned this, but seeing Lewis come out and celebrate with Dorian after her first win was amazing and just like the perfect example of how the F1 drivers should be getting involved with their Academy drivers.
Yeah, I love that. And there were great showings of support, I would say, from across the F1 paddock this weekend. Lots of pictures of drivers with the F1 Academy drivers and all of that. So hopefully we see more of that and more support. My favorite moment was Susie waving the flag on the first race. It was just so cool to see her doing that. She looked so happy and just feels like a dream realized. And it's really exciting to see all this come to life, especially for Susie. And my runner-up goes down to the cool down room footage at the end of race one, like I already mentioned.
But I love that we're getting that.
To see them, to see them like talking about it, being competitive, super excited, first race of the season. So I loved that.
For news, there is so much news going on in F1. That might even be an understatement. One item that continues to be ongoing is the Alpine organizational reshuffle, as they really struggle with technical leadership and just the running of the team in general. Earlier this week, after the performance at Bahrain, the technical director Matt Harmon and head of aerodynamics Dirk De Beer resigned from their roles. One thing that's really interesting that they mentioned, I think it was on the race podcast, was that these were voluntary resignations. So it wasn't even the team saying just this isn't working out after the first race went so badly. It seems like for whatever reason, people in senior roles felt like maybe they don't have the tools to accomplish what they need. It's interesting that they were voluntary resignations after only one race. So the turmoil seems to be running really deep there.
Another piece of news is the investigations or criticism into FIA president Ben Sulayem. He has multiple allegations for trying to, one, overturn a penalty against Alonso at the Saudi GP last year, and then also telling officials to not certify the Vegas circuit for the race last year. So,
yeah, that's pretty tough. A couple of other pieces of news. So Audi has upped their commitment to F1 and they've taken a 100% stake in Sauber. Previously, it was not a full buyout. They've now taken 100% stake ahead of their entrance to the sport in 2026. So definitely upping the commitment after some rumors, I think, that Audi maybe was getting cold feet, but they've doubled down.
That's one way to signal that you do not have cold feet.
Some updates on the Red Bull situation. After Bahrain, Jos Verstappen, Max's dad, outwardly criticized Christian Horner, said that the team is in danger of being torn apart, said that Christian had caused the situation but was playing the victim, said the situation was untenable. And Max really notably did not distance himself for those comments. He was asked about it extensively this weekend, as you'd expect. And Max really emphasized that he's extremely close with his dad. His dad was an F1 driver and is kind of basically part of Max's management. He's at, I think, the majority of Grand Prix in the Red Bull garage. He's super involved. And Max just reiterated how close he is with his dad, how he can't imagine racing without his dad. He said, "My dad's not a liar." So that really kind of further highlighted the rifts within Red Bull.
It definitely feels like there's two factions. It's Max, it's his dad, it's potentially Helmut Marko, Adrian Newey. Like, they're all on one side, and it seems like maybe Horner might be in his own camp. But again, like, we don't, you know, we have a lot of speculation, a lot of people saying things, a lot of interviews. Like, Helmut Marko did also have his own Red Bull investigation relating to this current ongoing investigation. But I think the outcome of him, of that, was him saying, "I'm going to continue at Red Bull. My contract still has 3 years to run, but I don't actually think any of this is fully handled yet. And we don't know how it's going to shake out between all these different rifts and all these different people within the organization."
Yeah, the only thing that seems certain is it can't just, like, go on like this forever with no resolution. Like, there needs, like, something needs to happen. And it just feels frustrating that it's taking so long, and there's such a lack of transparency surrounding the whole thing, as we said a million times. But yeah, it just feels like the shoe's got to drop at some point. So we'll see what happens. To wrap up, we're bringing back a fun conundrum. And since we had a somewhat similar situation this weekend, our conundrum this week is: you are ill, but you're worried your team's reserve driver is potentially better than you. Do you race?
Oh my God. And I think Sainz's situation was even worse, because it was like, and you don't even have a seat at the team next year.
Maybe better. And Ollie's like 18. So yeah, I don't know. But what would you do?
I mean, actually, I think you can die if your appendix is going to burst. So he probably, knowing Sainz, he probably went up until like the last minute, and they're like, "No, like, this is actually really bad. You can't." So if I had like free will and knew that a doctor would pull me out at the last second, but I felt fully deathly ill, yeah, I would probably race and suck it up.
Slay.
I'm so strong.
In our imaginary world.
Yeah. In our imaginary world, I'm not a terrible driver and afraid of going fast.
I think if I was super, super sick, I would do my best to stay in the car. But granted that I'm not a race car driver and really don't enjoy being sick, I'm actually not quite sure how far that would get me. I do not.
Okay, so Sarah might actually not race.
I love this realism.
Tiki, what about you?
I feel so torn. I think it would depend on so many factors. Like, is there a race the next weekend? Is it a doubleheader? If so, I would rest and recuperate for the one, you know, weekend and be back the next weekend. If it's not a doubleheader, then maybe I would just stick it out.
Okay, actually, very well said. I like that you considered the cadence of races, which I did not think about. So that is your conundrum. That is your recap for another amazing weekend to round out our opening doubleheader. We'll see you back here for the Australian Grand Prix. And in the meantime, you still can join our Grid Rival League. So come on over. I'm not doing great, but I'm working on it. And I'm sure you guys can all beat us. So we can't wait to see what happens.